medicine, science, engineering, candy floss, Lego, philosophy, music, problems, people, hope, mostly hope.
So, Adam, this has been a bit of a weird week for us.
That's an understatement.
We're getting a little bit of a late start on covering the latest episode of Doctor Who. I was on vacation, then I got sick, and then our planned day to record didn't work out. So we're getting this in kind of like right at the end, right before the next episode airs. But we are going to get this out there before the next episode airs. And we hopefully will allow for enough time that people can listen to this one really quick and then jump into the next episode that airs on Sunday.
Yeah, and props to you. You're the one that said, no, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. I was ready to phone it in, but props to you for pushing to get it done.
Hey, sometimes life gets in the way of us podcasters. You know, this is for us at least, podcasting is a hobby and not a job. So sometimes our real life has to take precedence, but we still try to slip these episodes in when we can. And, you know, there's a bit of a more of a demand as there's new episodes coming out weekly. So we don't have as much leeway with break time.
Yeah.
But we're ready to talk about this one. We're ready to talk about the Saranga conundrum.
I'm glad you're the one that's saying it and not me.
So this is episode 5 of series 11. We're already 5 episodes into series 11. Can you believe that?
I know. We're at the halfway point. We're at the 50% mark for the Doctor Who for the year.
Wow, 50%. So there's 10 episodes, right?
Yeah, it's a 10 episode series. We just had episode 5. We're on the downhill. We hit the peak and now it's downhill.
That's kind of crazy. So we can look at the numbers overall because we had talked about Doctor Who and how in the past we've talked about ups and downs of Doctor Who. You know, there's some episodes that are great, some that aren't so great, and there always seems to be these kind of ups and downs. And at the beginning of the season, after about 3 episodes, we were just like, wow, are they going to just like clean, you know, is it going to be a clean sweep, 10 episodes in a row, all great episodes? And then the spider episode happened and it kind of faltered a little bit, at least for some of us. And now this episode happened and we have opinions about this. So it's interesting to see that maybe these patterns actually are going to happen no matter who the showrunner is.
Yeah, you know what? You can't bat 100% of the time, right? There's going to be a few downturns here and there.
Yeah. And we had kind of talked about maybe with a shorter season, that means, you know, they focus in more on some of the storytelling and not so much filler. No filler episodes. I'm not going to go as far as to say this was a filler episode, but it kind of was a filler episode.
And one of the telltale signs to me that this was somewhat like a filler episode is that if you step back and you look at it, you could place this episode pretty much anywhere in the season. It didn't have to be episode 5. It could be episode 7. It could be episode 8. It could be episode 3 for that matter. Like, it doesn't have to be where it is to be an episode. It has really very little connections to anything else, which isn't a bad thing. It broke from like this cohesive story that seemed to be coming together.
Yeah. It doesn't. And I apologize for my voice because I'm getting over sickness. So I'm like, I'm at the tail end of it. I'm not feeling horrible, but my voice definitely still is kind of still cracking. So I apologize for that for the listeners. But yeah, I agree with you. This one doesn't really have any connective tissue to the last episode, and it doesn't really progress any of the characters' story forward. It's just kind of single place in time. Like you said, this could have been set anywhere in Doctor Who. This could have been any Doctor. There really wasn't anything that was very specific to this episode that really kind of made it feel like a 13th Doctor story.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It really could have been any of the companions, any of the friends. I mean, there were a couple elements here and there where we get that exchange between Yaz and Ryan and the father relationship with the Griffin, right? The Griffin giving birth, and that whole, hey mate, be a father, you just have to be there. Like, there's that exchange, But really, you could have probably plugged a lot of different companions even into this episode, and it would have just been another Doctor Who episode. Again, that's not a bad thing, but it's just when it comes to the series that we're working our way through, it's a prototypical Doctor Who episode where you could mix and match whatever doctor or companions you want in there, and it would still be an episode.
Yes. And this one spoke the language of Doctor Who more so than I think any episode so far this season. If we're looking back at Tennant's run, Smith's run, even Eccleston, there's some certain language of Doctor Who. There's a certain, you know, we always kind of joke around about these episodes that are very formulaic, where they get separated from the TARDIS. They're on a space station. They are on a submarine. They're on some sort of vessel where they're helping the crew. That is a very tried and true Doctor Who story. And I kind of thought maybe Chibnall would not do one of those. You know, maybe we get a whole season where it's completely different type of storytelling. But it's part of me is a little disappointed that we got one like this so early in the season. And a part of me is kind of like, okay, they're not trying to reinvent the wheel.
And maybe that's the best way to look at it. Maybe instead of, I guess, as I was looking at this episode, it was like, I kind of wanted to see more, the envelope pushed more. But maybe this is that subtle nod to Whovian saying, we're still here. Like, this is still Doctor Who. At the end of the day, no matter the different things that might be changing or the direction that things might have gone, it's still Doctor Who. We still have these tried and true foundational elements of Doctor Who in place.
And maybe this will just be the one episode of the 10 that fits this formula, and it won't be like a Capaldi season where we get like three or four of these.
I mean, we are at the halfway point, right? You can't fit many more of these in here if they're trying to have some sort of cohesive story, which it seems like they are. There's these elements that, I don't know, there were the elements at the beginning that it's like, okay, I'm waiting for some of those to resurface again.
Well, to finish off kind of the data for this episode, this one is written again by Chris Chibnall. I think he's just going to have writing credit across the board for all of these. And then this was directed by Jennifer Perrot, or Perrot. I'm not sure how to correctly pronounce that. Yeah, so the Doctor, they start out this episode and they're on a junk planet where the Doctor's not exactly sure if it's Cephalon 59 or if it's Cephalon 27. Some pretty funny kind of back and forth between Graham and the Doctor. You know, needle, haystack, you know, that type of thing.
Yes.
I like the Doctor's kind of like, hey, I took you rain bathing in the upper tropics of Karastarno or whatever. Like, it's so they've been traveling around a bit. This isn't just the next destination after the spider episode. They had possibly gone on a couple other adventures between this.
Yeah. And like Graham says, listen, that was amazing. Like he's enjoyed, which is slightly different from the original Graham that we had, who seemed very hesitant. He seems to have adjusted quite well as he's picking through a garbage heap he's not by himself. The others are there, but they are separated. He has a metal detector, it looks like. So, it seems like the Doctor and her friends are jumping around quite a bit. We've already had a couple other mentions in Rosa where it's like, oh, maybe there's all these other adventures or all these other places that they've already gone, these times that they've already gone to. It seems like that's still the case.
These are the kind of openings for comic book, you know, issues, novels. You know, they have these other things, that these other stories they tell with these characters sometimes, that we haven't really dug into ourselves too much, but we know they're out there. So maybe we'll get a comic book issue about the rain bathing in the upward tropics of Karastarno.
I mean, they are pushing the comics really hard right now. So who knows, maybe those stories are going to be in there, which that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, for the completionists that really want to get all the stories, you know, if you have time, go read the comics and the books too.
The artwork looks pretty solid for these ones.
So we got the instance of a sonic mine. They accidentally come upon the sonic mine, which the doctor quickly realizes she's not going to be able to defuse in time and just apologizes to everyone. Because I think, like, unless they had gotten saved by the ship, they probably all would have died.
It definitely seemed that way. I mean, even later in the episode, we find out that they were out for 4 days. So who knows how much longer they would have been out. And Graham even says, like, they're bringing us too. So it required some work to bring them back to consciousness. So yeah, they might have been laying on the junk planet and getting scavenged. Is that what they do?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of the way they were describing the damage that these sonic mines cause, it was kind of like unless there was some major, help with from the medical facility, they would have all died pretty quickly. So that yeah, and then we had kind of talked before about the doctor. This season seems to say I'm sorry a lot. I know you've been kind of tracking some of that. What is the where are we where do we stand on the doctor and how many times that she's said I'm sorry this season?
So it's kind of fun looking back at the different episodes, and there's always nuances when someone says sorry, like how are they really intending it? What are they really meaning? For the sake of my tracking, I've just looked at the generic, how many times is sorry being said and who is the one saying sorry? So for this episode in particular, sorry is said 18 times in the episode. 9 of those times are by the doctor. And just looking through it, a lot of those times that the doctor is saying sorry, she is legitimately saying sorry. And this instance with the sonic mine, she's legitimately saying, "I'm sorry. Like, there's nothing I can do. This is gonna be bad." So yeah, like 18 times, it's the most times sorry has been said in an episode, and it's also the most times the doctor has been the one saying sorry.
So far this season.
So far this season, yeah. So
Yeah.
far this series, yeah.
It did really stand out to me this episode. The number of times I did not think it was that high, but I did notice a lot of apologies from the doctor. I guess that's I don't know if that's just the writing of Chibnall and he likes to have the doctor say sorry a lot, or if that's just, they're just trying to show us a different version of the doctor who is a little more apologetic and not as haphazard.
Yeah, the one thing, and this is totally somewhat of a sidetrack, the one thing that I found interesting is like the one episode I thought I would see sorry said the most in, Rosa, that one has sorry said the least amount of times. And the doctor only says sorry twice. And it's like if there's an episode where someone would feel the need to say sorry a lot, I would think it would be that one. But that one is actually at the bottom of the list when it comes to the number of times that sorry is said. Maybe I'm the only one that finds that interesting. And I do think just writing style in general, in real life, people have a tendency to say sorry a lot for a lot of different reasons in a lot of different ways. So maybe it is just that more natural writing style of Chibnall that's bringing it out where we haven't quite had that as much, in past years.
So we get introduced to this medical facility, basically a spaceship that is taking these patients back to, I think it's Rhesus One. Pretty big ship. Didn't seem like they had that many patients. What there was only two other patients on the ship, other than the doctor and the companions. The Saranga is the name of the ship. But we got introduced to Ronan, who is an android. General Cicero and Dirkus, her brother. And I guess Ronan was kind of like the assistant, I guess you could say, for General Cicero. And then the other patient was, actually, I don't remember his name. What it was, Yas? I think it was Yas, who was the Giftan, who looked very human but was not human. And Yas was male but was also pregnant. Which was an interesting twist to the story, but they explained it. Obviously, human males, as we currently stand, cannot get pregnant. But this alien race, the Giftan, males can get pregnant, and they only give birth to males, and they basically are only pregnant for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's this whole different biology, but the guy looked very human.
He looked very human, and honestly, the entire situation was good for a couple laughs. Especially, I don't know. My wife found the labor and delivery part to be especially comical with Ryan and Graham trying to help out.
I did too. I actually thought that was maybe the funniest part of the episode. This this guy Yas, who, you know, he's nervous to have a baby. He didn't necessarily want to get pregnant. It was kind of an accident.
Those holidays, they get you every time.
And so he was ready to give up the baby. And they never really say, when he said he was going to give up the baby, they never really explained what that meant. Like, is he giving up the baby to an orphanage for adoption? They were just kind of like, they didn't really get into the details of how that works in the Giftan society. But he wasn't necessarily wanting to take responsibility for having this child. And so when things started happening and he starts to have the baby, he gets really nervous and then, you know, gets the help of the most unlikely people that would help him, Graham and Ryan, which, you know, hijinks ensue.
Yeah, but I mean, just their relationship, their personalities. It was a very funny mix. Calling back to watch or call the midwife, and Graham saying that he's watched every episode, and but he always looks away at the squeamish parts or whatever he called those. It was there was some good comedic moments in that. And honestly, like, Graham and Ryan are both, they do such a solid job.
Yeah, and I'm liking to see the development of their relationship. I mean, obviously they had a relationship before they met the doctor that was a bit contentious, but ever since losing Grace, the two characters have seemed to be getting some sort of a bond. Even though Ryan seems to be kind of pushing away still, you can tell that they enjoy each other's company and they actually are a great team.
Yeah, I mean, they really are a great team. And I think that's one of those things that does call back to previous episodes, is there's the one instance that Graham throws out the fist bump and Ryan looks at it. And I have to say, in that moment, it was like, ooh, it's going to happen. Like, in my, like, I wanted to see the fist bump take place, but Ryan just looks at it and he like shakes his head, but he didn't blow it off entirely. I wonder if that's going to be like one of those celebratory moments towards the end of the series where it's like the fist bump takes place and I'm going to toss my popcorn and just be happy about it. I don't know, but there is that relational element where they are, or at least Ryan is warming towards Graham. And it's interesting to see where that might end up.
I did like how this situation with Yas, it showed Ryan, or it showed kind of Ryan's insight into parenthood and like some of the things he had gone through. And it was good to see Ryan almost giving Yas a pep talk about how he needed to be there for his son. Because Ryan had gone through and is still going through a situation in his life where his father is not there for him. And we got a lot more information in this episode about Ryan and his parents and what happened to his mom. There was a lot of information. So it was kind of nice to see. We got the reveal of the information with the conversation between Yas and Ryan, but then later on, when Ryan's talking to Yas and Yas in the same episode.
It's crazy.
It was kind of like him giving this pep talk, but he had learned from his own life experiences and was able to share that in a positive way. I actually really liked that. I was really touched by that part of the episode.
Yeah, I was surprised because the way that it plays out, there definitely feels like there's kind of this pulling back of the curtain in Ryan's mind where, yeah, it still is a tough spot for him and he's still struggling through it. But in a sense, he's recognizing where he is at in his life. And although he doesn't agree with it, kind of what could have led his father to do what he had done, like how hard it would be to be a father at such a young age and then to go through the experiences that he went through and all of that, so that there is kind of this recognition, but then also, like you mentioned, Ryan encouraging Yas to like, no, you just need to be there. Like, no matter what, that is at its foundation, the most important thing, be there. You don't need to be perfect. Just be present.
Right. And we found out that Ryan, his mother died of kind of like, I guess like a heart attack when he was only 13, and he's the one that found her.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of insight into him as a character, which I really appreciated. I thought that, and I think him and Yaz have definitely built this bond where he's starting to feel more comfortable sharing information like that with her.
Yeah, to the point where he's like, why am I talking about this? Like, it's one of those bonds that forms without you necessarily intentionally having it form, and then you find yourself talking about more than what you thought you should or normally would. That's kind of their relationship right now. They talk through things without realizing what they're talking through, and then it's like, oh dang, why did I share that?
Well, they kind of only have each other. I mean, the doctor isn't necessarily going to be the person you sit down and want to have like a really serious conversation with. Yep. And Graham is kind of older, and he obviously is closer to the situation with Ryan, that Ryan probably just doesn't feel comfortable talking to Graham about certain things. So to have someone who is a similar age, someone who is kind of a past friend, that they can probably confide in each other, and they don't really have a lot of other options.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we met a couple other characters, the kind of the medical staff of this ship. There's only two of them, Astos and Mobley. And both interesting characters. Astos is obviously the lead, I guess, of this medical team. And Mobley is, in a way, it seemed like she was in training. I don't remember exactly what they had said her role was, but it was kind of like she was the apprentice to the master.
Yeah, yeah. Towards the end, she mentions how, or towards the middle, she mentions how no one else took a chance on her, and Astos basically is the only one that believed in her. And even at the beginning, like where she's looking for the med tags and she can't find it, she swears she made a mistake, and Astos is like, no, I'm sure you did everything right. She definitely seems like she's more in training and might not necessarily be the top of her class.
I liked Astos a lot. He was an interesting character in that it felt like he wasn't intimidated by the doctor, and he was kind of willing to second guess the doctor's actions. A lot of times we see these episodes of Doctor Who where the doctor kind of just haphazardly does whatever he or she wants, and everyone around them just kind of deals with it, accepts it. But Astos was kind of like, nope, like you can't do that.
Yeah, it was a really strange situation, at least for me, at the very start of the episode. Number one, to have the doctor acting the way that she was acting, and then to have Astos step up and basically like call the doctor out on the carpet for it.
Specifically, it was interesting to see that.
Yeah. It was a really interesting dynamic. And honestly, I couldn't quite process it in the moment. It took watching that specific part a second time to be able to be like, oh, okay, that does sit okay with me.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it's definitely, we're with Jodie Whittaker's version of the Doctor, with the 13th Doctor, we're getting a very different take on the Doctor.
Yeah.
And she's definitely not as confident. She tries, it seems like there are times where she puts on this faux confidence, but she's definitely not as confident. She second guesses herself a lot. She says sorry a lot, as we pointed out. And even in this moment, it's almost like she's trying to get back to the TARDIS. She's not necessarily taking into account the effects it's going to have on the other people on the ship. And it takes this normal dude to kind of point that out to her. And that's not something we see very often with the doctor. We don't see the doctor corrected very often. And usually it's a companion. You know, I know Clara had some moments where she kind of stepped up and corrected the doctor. Bill had moments where she did as well. But we've never really seen just a random person kind of be like, hey, you're being selfish. What you're doing is going to actually harm these other people. And the doctor being like, oh yeah, you're right. I thought it was very different.
Yeah, and yet now that you mention it, I wonder how, yeah, maybe the person, but I guess in my mind, it was, wow, has the Doctor ever acted like this before? But now that you mention it, the way that Clara would correct or the way that Bill would correct, the Doctor does get a wild hair every now and then and thinks of some things or some solutions or some routes that might not be the best. And so maybe that aspect isn't so far off character, but the idea of just some rando correcting, that does seem a little bit unique.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the Doctor has had many examples of times where they don't necessarily take the greater good into consideration when they're doing something, and it's usually because they are trying to save the TARDIS or save their companions.
Yeah,
that's when they kind of start to break the rules. So yeah, it's definitely happened before, but I thought this instance was a little unique in that she quickly came around and was like, yeah, you're right, and then stopped. And then, out of nowhere, something hits the ship. This episode was kind of like, okay, where are they going with this? And then something just out of nowhere appears. They needed something else to move the plot forward, and they just threw it right at the ship.
Yeah, and it hit the side of the ship, and it went pa-ting.
Nice. I like that.
Yes.
It did. It did hit the side of the ship. It did it set things in motion with kind of what happened with the rest of the episode. And I don't know, I feel like this is the type of creature that you can either love or hate. For people that don't necessarily enjoy the silliness of some of the creatures or monsters the Doctor comes up against, this might have rubbed him the wrong way. I tend to not like the silly creatures as much, but this one, for whatever reason, didn't really bother me.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, honestly. Like, the only thing that got me is from the very first moment, it was like, all they did is repackage Stitch. Like, it is Stitch, some crazy science experiment gone wrong that they have no idea where it came from, and it eats everything. Like, I don't know. It was like, okay, it's too on the nose. Like, that is Stitch.
For anyone that's listening to this that doesn't know what Adam's talking about when he says Stitch, it's a character from a Disney movie, Lilo and Stitch, that is an alien, that is a little alien that doesn't really speak English and causes havoc and eats everything and looks very similar to what the Pating looked like. Maybe a little bit more cuddly and lovable than the Pating, but definitely I agree with you. I mean, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. I've watched Lilo and Stitch a lot, and I really like that movie a lot. So the comparison is spot on, that this is, if not Stitch exactly, it's another experiment from the same scientist. It literally looks like it came out of that movie. So it was a little too on the nose, yeah, I think, when it came to that.
I don't know, like, as soon as the Pating at the end gets that huge energy blast, it's like, oh, okay. It's happy now. Like, it was just hungry. Like, Stitch, when Stitch gets really hungry, that level rises. So I don't know. It wasn't a miss for me. It was just like, I wonder what movie they were watching when they wrote this episode.
Yeah, so it was kind of another situation where the thing that's causing the issues, kind of like the spiders, in the end they kind of decide it wasn't that thing's fault. You know, it's just hungry. They have yet to really come, I guess, maybe not. They have definitely come up against a couple of villains who were villains. But then there's been a lot of this, you know, misunderstood creatures too. But even in the end with this one, they had to eat the bomb and it didn't die. It kind of just flew. It got shot out the airlock. So I think they're yet, I think the Doctor is yet to have killed a adversary, I guess you could say, in this season.
Yeah. I mean, there's really been no resolution with any of the quote unquote bad guys of this series. Tim Shaw teleports out. Krasko, he's zipped back in time somewhere. In the Ghost Monument, there was no bad. Well, I guess they did light those things on fire. That might be the closest we get to it. But everything else, it's kind of just they're kicked out and everything's good.
Yeah, I mean, the spiders did die, I'm assuming. But even that wasn't necessarily the doctor's doing, or other than
arguably natural causes. Arguably natural causes.
So, yeah. But yeah, there hasn't been a clear doctor dispatches with an evildoer, really, you know, in which leads to that character's death. That has yet to happen this season.
Yeah, there's no exploding Daleks.
No exploding Daleks. So when they were getting the information on the Pating, did you catch all of the other villains that popped up on the screen?
I didn't. I missed that.
I think everyone missed it. I think the only reason why I know this list is because I looked it up and somebody actually went through and paused like every frame and picked it up. Yeah, so on the screen you see very quickly, you know, blink and you miss it, Cybermen, Ood, Weeping Angel, Centaurans, the Silent, Solarian, a Zygon. I think there were a couple others. I actually did catch the Zygon at the end, but other than that, I didn't catch the other ones. So, but, you know, no classic villains in the series. I guess they bent the rule a little bit. There are some images of classic villains.
That's interesting because I did read an article between watching it and now recording where someone was like, I wonder if the Daleks were just creeping right off screen. And then they have this theory of the century that it took place in and kind of the conflict that was taking place and this territorial dispute that was happening. And then maybe, just maybe, the Daleks were hovering somewhere just off screen. But yeah, with the whole idea of no classic villains or monsters being in the series, that is, I don't know, maybe that's a nice little piece of Easter egg for Chibnall to slide in there.
Yeah. So kind of like fast forwarding a little bit, the Pating is on the ship. It's causing all this havoc. Rhesus One is, they have all these sensors on the ship and they're realizing that there's this danger on the ship. And so there's like this kind of three strikes and you're out situation going on where they have to report back if there's nothing wrong. But if they report back three times and say there's nothing wrong and there still seems to be something wrong because of the sensors, then Rhesus One's just going to blow the ship up because they're willing to lose a few patients to save, I guess, the facility on Rhesus One, which has presumably thousands of patients, if not more. So kill the few to save the many.
Yeah, that was a fun little dynamic going on of the doctor having to kind of send through the false positive. And then there's the Pating that they're trying to protect the atomic drive from the Pating, because as soon as it eats that, then everything's going to go and it's all going to blow up and a bomb is on the ship and all this other stuff. But right before we get to the end, kind of the resolution of the episode, I have to say, like, the doctor going to the not the atomic drive, it's the antimatter drive, going there and kind of like essentially expressing her love of what that was. That was an awesome moment. That was one of those moments where it was like, okay, that was really cool to have her kind of stand in awe and explain the science behind it. And then, like, I love it conceptually and in reality. Like, that was just fun. And then she goes through, is it there that she goes through her degrees? No, that was in another place. All the things that she has degrees in, what she's a doctor of. But that moment with the antimatter drive, that is an awesome moment of the episode.
Yeah, she had a moment with Malbus, Mobley. She had a moment with Mobley where she's trying to encourage her, and she says she's a doctor, and then she's like, oh, you're a medical doctor? And she's like, well, I'm a doctor of, and then she goes through this whole list of things, including what Lego was on there, which I thought that was a cool shout-out.
Yes, yep, Lego.
I think there was like string candy or something. I don't know. She said a lot of random things.
Candy floss. And then she also mentioned hope, which I've seen a couple of people call that out specifically, that it's really cool to see the doctor returning to be the doctor of hope.
Mm-hmm. And she did have a moment of a doctor speech there when she was talking to her. There was this moment where it was almost like it was about to go into one of the big speeches that we would get from the Doctor. It was like it was a tease. I don't think we got. I wouldn't call it a full fledged, you know, monologue, but the Doctor definitely was starting to get into that type of a thing.
Yeah, it's there's been a couple times in the first five episodes where we've been right on the edge of what feels like one of those Moffat-esque moments, one of those speeches, and then it just kind of like drifts right by you, and it's like, ooh, that was expectations unfulfilled in that moment. But that doesn't mean that there aren't solid moments. It's just I think I'm so conditioned to want to have one of those monologues. I went back this past week and read through the Pandorca opens speech, and like just reading through it, it sticks out to you so much how epic that moment was. And just wanting to have like see Whitaker get that moment, I think she would do an incredible job and just nail it. She would hit it out of the park. But yeah, it was right there, and then it kind of got pulled away.
Would it be against this Doctor's personality to grandstand like that, though? That's a very Doctor thing that we got used to, especially with, I would say, Smith perfected it. Tennant had his moments. Capaldi definitely had a couple. But it is a bit of grandstanding. It's kind of like this, hey, look at me, and you know, let me just tell you how it is. And I don't know if that fits in the personality of the 13th Doctor.
I don't know if it does either. And the moments where it's like the moments where she, for lack of a better way of putting it, toots her own horn are like really underplayed. So the whole like Book of Celebrants where she's like, oh, you were in the Book of Celebrants and yada, yada. And they're like, oh, you were too. And you have like a chapter. And she's like, oh, common name. And she walks out of the room. And then she pokes her head back in and she's like, by the way, it was more like a volume, but just so you know.
Just so
and then
you
she
know.
Like turns around and walks out. Like
yeah.
That it's not that, yeah, it's not grandstanding. It's more subtle and kind of held back, but there are still those moments where she likes to poke, like in the Ghost Monument where she makes the comment about, oh yeah, and didn't I mention I'm like incredibly smart? Like just offhand comments that kind of reiterate who she is and the clever nature of her character.
Yeah, that's true. A couple other things to point out about this episode. Well, we haven't really talked too much about the general and the neural piloting or whatever it was called, the general and her brother and that whole dynamic. I wasn't that interested in those characters, but for whatever reason. So I was kind of just like, okay, whatever. And the fact that he was able to just build some neural link. It was almost like what the Doctor was doing when the Doctor just built a Sonic and then the Doctor built this teleport thing. And I was like, why didn't they just have the Doctor build it? They've already established the Doctor can do that stuff.
Yeah, that I did vocally call that out where it was like he just ripped up a floorboard and built this whole headset and stuff. Like, how did that work necessarily? They weren't bad characters. They really weren't. And it's not that the actors were terrible that were playing the characters, but I'm with you. Like at the end of the day, there was so much other stuff going on that I was interested in. Any amount of time spent with them, it was just like, I don't really get their dynamic. What was going on between them? Why they had such a rough relationship? And I sound like a terrible and heartless person, but when the general dies, I really didn't feel all that bad. Like it wasn't like, oh man, this is so terrible. Like we lost this character. It was just like, yeah, it kind of was going to happen.
I felt more for Astos, his character, when he died.
Oh, absolutely.
Than I did for the general. I felt like the general, they didn't really establish her character very well. And she was a very kind of cold character. So you just didn't get to know her enough, and then by the end it was and even when she died, it was almost like they just showed that she was dead. You didn't really necessarily see the moment that it happened. I mean, I know she sacrificed herself for everyone, so we should probably feel a little bit more for the character. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I just was like, oh, okay, that's Too bad.
Yeah,
her brother didn't seem that upset either. He gained a droid friend.
He gained a droid friend, and he was able to pilot a ship, and that's what the Cicero are born for, or whatever he said. Yeah,
yeah. There was a nice Agatha Christie shout out. I thought that was funny when the doctor pulled everybody into a room. The Perot
moment.
Yeah. Sorry, bit Perot. I thought that was a nice shout out.
I did enjoy that. Yep.
And then Hamilton got a shout out.
Yes, it did.
She likes Hamilton, and she's seen all 900 casts.
And you know what made my day is that, like, 2 days later after watching the episode, or a day after watching the episode, Lin-Manuel Miranda, BBC tweeted that moment, and Lin-Manuel Miranda retweeted it and commented on it. And I was like, ooh, this is so good.
I'm a recent, I have recently discovered Hamilton. I was very aware of its existence for a long time, but never got around to listening to the soundtrack or watching it. I haven't been to the show. I know it's tough to get tickets to still. But I did resort to looking at pirated videos on YouTube and watch the original cast run through the whole thing. It kind of was a bit mind blowing how good it was. And now, you know, I've started listening to the soundtrack and stuff more, and now I want to go see the show for real. So I'm looking for tickets somewhere, because I guess they're going on like a US tour.
Yeah. So yep.
I'm kind of in the midst of discovering Hamilton. So then when it got the shout out, I was like, oh, that's cool. I got a Lego shout out. I got a Hamilton shout out. Got a Perot shout out. There's some good shout outs in this episode.
Yeah. They're doing a really good job of tying it back into kind of current things.
Yeah, and so the last thing we will talk about before we wrap up, unless you have anything else, is the naming of the baby. I thought that was a funny moment when Graham and Ryan just thought that this guy was going to name his son after them, but he ends up naming his son Avocado Pear.
Yes, I legitimately laughed out loud at that moment just because of Ryan and Graham's faces and that whole discussion that takes place there, and the avocado pear being the hero of Earth. It was a good moment.
Yes. And I like how Ryan was kind of like, well, I thought maybe you'd name it like Ryan Graham Ryan or Ryan Graham. And he's just like, he'd be a laughing stock. Like, why would I name him such a ridiculous name like Graham Ryan when I can name him Avocado Pear? But, I mean, we have celebrities here name their kids Apple and whatever else. So I guess maybe that's where they got it from.
Avocado is a great, very relevant, popular name right now. So go for it.
So I don't know. Overall, for me, It was just a fun episode. It kind of felt like a throwaway episode. I don't know how often I'll go back and revisit this one, but there wasn't anything that stood out to me as necessarily being a bad episode. It was just like, okay, it was fun. I laughed a lot listening or watching this episode. I enjoyed some of the moments we got with Ryan and Graham and learning more about Ryan's family. So I thought there was some important stuff that was in this episode. So overall, you know, I still liked it.
Yeah, I think as an episode by itself, it's a fine episode. It's a decent episode. It's a proper Doctor Who episode. Where it was slightly off for me was kind of just where does it sit and the lead into, and it just something didn't feel quite connected for me. That doesn't mean I didn't enjoy the episode. I did, and honestly, talking with you about it, I think I enjoyed it more than what I was giving myself credit for. But yeah, it was a good episode.
So we have five episodes. Perfect time to rank. No prep time. Where does this fall? Where does this episode fall in the five episodes so far this season? How would you rank them off the top of your head?
Dang. How would I rank them off the top of my head? I think I'd do Ghost Monument 1, Rosa 2, Woman Who Fell to Earth 3, Arachnids UK 4, and Seringa Conundrum 5.
Interesting. Okay, so I'm going to say Woman Who Fell to Earth 1. And... oh, man. Ghost Monument 2, Rosa 3. I'm just going to go in order of the season. Actually, I like this Seringa Conundrum 4, and then I'd say Arachnids in the UK 5.
Okay.
It's my least favorite, but yeah.
I mean, it's one of those ones that, like, I can't disagree or argue because it makes sense. Like, I can't argue that The Woman Who Fell to Earth is not a better episode than Ghost Monument, but I also don't feel like anybody trying to argue with me that Ghost Monument was a weaker episode than The Woman Who Fell to Earth was. Like,
yeah, I feel like the first three episodes for me could be interchangeable. They're all like almost equal. I really, really enjoyed all three of those in different ways. So those are almost interchangeable.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the first one was just like the introduction of the Doctor, and I felt like that's just like that should be ranked number one.
Yeah, I know. You like your introductions.
I like my introduction episodes. So, but
you do.
All right. So my voice is giving up, and we are reaching the end of our time. If we go too much longer, the next episode's going to air. So we're going to wrap up.
Let's cut it loose.
So thanks everyone for listening. You can always leave us a review on iTunes. We have gotten a couple new reviews. So thanks for those of you that have done that. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. We're on Facebook. Look us up. Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio. And you can always shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. So until next time.
Bye-bye, pating. Intruder ejected. Not rejected. Aw, come on. I'm so close.
Did they say bye-bye, pating?
Bye-bye. Bye-bye always comes out as bye-bye to me. So I can't say bye-bye. It always is just bye-bye.